Welcome to PR After Hours, your weekly cocktail of news and interviews with leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. So pull up a chair in our virtual lounge. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will be right back after this.
Okay, if I was going to like make a horror film, I think my guest is already going to leave when he hears this. If I was going to make a horror film, I think it would be something that's happened to me the past year or so, which is Attack of the Lead Gen, folks. It's just weird. Every day on LinkedIn, I get a new dude. I think I can get you a lot more leads. I can do a lot more for you. It's just come out of the woodwork. And it's like, that's when I saw that our next guest was interested in chatting with me, if he's still there after I said that. And I didn't mean that to be snarky to him at all, but it just seems like it's exploding, right? But that's why I'm glad we have our guest today, because he's going to hopefully explain it all to us, right? I mean, from what I understand, pretty obvious, lead gen is a process of getting the interest of potential customers to increase future sales. Okay, makes sense. But I'm curious about a lot of things about it, and that's why Josh Sweeney's here. He's a seasoned entrepreneur whose relentless drive has given him the platform to build big ideas and even bigger companies. One of his successes, Atcore Systems, was acquired in 2016 by a leading partner in the CRM industry. Experiencing the impact of various sales and marketing challenges over the years, Josh founded FounderScale. He has made it his mission to help founder-led organizations increase sales. Well, who could argue with that? Josh Sweeney, welcome to PR After Hours.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Didn't scare you off with that, did I?
No, definitely not.
What's going on with this? Because Josh, is it just because I've reached a certain level of exposure that a lot of lead gen companies are knocking on my door? Or are you saying, is your industry experiencing some growth?
Well, I think, you know, from a lead gen perspective, it's kind of one, there's a couple aspects, right? One, it's the easy button, right? There's this concept where I can just delegate to somebody else. They're going to do all the hard work and just bring me these meetings. And we find that it doesn't really work that way, you know, and it's so easy that you're getting all of these, you know, solicitations on a constant basis. But what we see is the results aren't really there in most instances. So that's something we share a lot of is when does that really work? When does it not? And, you know, how well does that easy, but how easy is that easy button really?
I'm glad we're talking, because after a while you get worn down. I'm a very curious individual. I thought, well, maybe I'll try one of these and see, but I've held off, particularly the ones who just out of the blue email me and kind of act like they know my business when you know damn well it's a template. Right. And it's like, you know, I know my name is not dear first name here. First of all, I'm smart enough to know that, yeah. But sincerely, would you just tell me, if you would, and the audience, of course, what is your conception of lead generation in the realistic way you're describing it? And then tell us about how your company makes it happen.
Sure. So for lead generation, what most founders think of, what most business leaders think of is not maybe necessarily the marketing definition of lead generation, but the concept in their head is I'm going to pay somebody money. They're going to go target this audience that is just ready for me to get in front of them so that I can get a meeting and I can close a deal and there's a quick turnaround. And I'm being only slightly facetious there, right? But that is kind of the expectation, right? They're going to pay this money and within 90 days, they're going to make all their money back by having all these meetings.
Yeah.
And again, we just don't see it work that way. So the only ways like we see it work, kind of like with what you said, is it sounds good, right? It's like, okay, they're sending all these emails or LinkedIn messages or whatever their methodology is. And you're like, oh, I got to try that. You know, if I respond to this, then maybe somebody else would respond for my business. So it captures the imagination. But the thing that we find is that cold nature of most of those campaigns just doesn't work, right? You're getting too many of them for that to work. And that's where we say most companies aren't ready for lead generation. What they need is demand generation, and demand generation comes first.
Go on. I love this. Tell me about demand generation then. Tell me how that works.
Yeah. So our thought on lead generation is, you know, you don't want it to be completely cold. You don't want to be from list building or hoping somebody's engaged, right? Because the goal of lead generation in our space is to convert and close, right? You're taking somebody who's already engaged with your company and interacted with it, and now you're converting and closing. But a lot of small businesses don't have that list of engaged people, yeah. right? They haven't done enough marketing. They haven't stayed in front of them enough. And that's where demand generation comes in. So demand generation is higher on the funnel than lead gen. And the whole point of that is to engage and educate. So how are we engaging and educating, which is going to warm them up so that later, if you do want to get a meeting, they're responsive to that. And we find that that has a much better conversion ratio and builds the long-term scalability and doesn't just come down to kind of dumb luck in some ways.
Well, I've been in business 13 years and dumb luck might be my secret weapon, to be honest. But sincerely, only in the past few years, because, you know, it's the cobbler's children have no shoes. I'm a PR marketing guy. It's what I've been doing for almost 30 years. I've realized something, Josh, is that as a founder of a business, I have people who depend on me. I have clients, obviously, but I have people, contractors, employees who depend on me, family who depends on me to make a little money once in a while. As I get older, I just realize I'm very good at closing deals. Okay. I'm a good closer, but I just don't have, there's not enough hours in the day for me to market the business and do the work. I'm just too small in that area, Josh. You know what I'm saying? I'm a smaller yeah. I'm basically boutique at this point. At one point I was a little bigger and I've kind of downsized. So I realized I've got to do something. So and you're not going to hurt my feelings if I'm not, but as a boutique PR agency guy, even anywhere near the size of customer you would work with, or what would you recommend a guy like me do who understands, okay, I got 13 years of good word of mouth. I blogged consistently. I have hundreds of blogs. I've got decent SEO, but I'm not getting the phone to ring enough.
Yeah. So I would say the majority of our clients are between about 2 and 20 million okay. in revenue. We have some that are smaller and some that are larger, of course, but I would say the crucial thing we see for the founders when the founder is closing the majority of the deals, mm-hmm. it's how are we helping scale up their engagements, mm-hmm. right? So you, as a founder, we grow the business and one day we wake up and we're like, I'm out of time. I can't have any more meetings. Yeah. I don't have any more bandwidth. And that's what we like about demand generation is it's taking that and saying, okay, how do we piggyback on all the value that the founder has had and all the engagements they've had? And how do we amplify that? And so there's a number of different techniques that we like to use in demand gen to say, okay, let's piggyback on their expertise to get in front of more people. Podcast is a good way to do it, right? It's a one to many. So how are you scaling your time? That's a great demand generation tactic to get out in front of more people.
And then, so that's, let's say, yeah, I'm one of those clients that comes in the door with you. Let's kind of walk people through it maybe. Okay. Cause sure. I know we have a lot of founders who listen to the show beyond just PR and marketing pros and stuff. It's really interesting the mix we've got here. I accidentally have made a podcast more than a couple of people want to listen to. But do you, when you come in the door, let's just say Joe Smith comes in the door, he's a founder, he's between he's 2 to 3 million a year. What's the process? Do you do an analysis of all his assets and kind of sharpen a strategy from there? Can you walk us through if it's okay without giving away your secret
sure.
sauce?
Yeah. So two things we like to look at is one, what is that founder already doing to build relationships, right? Is it a podcast? Are they in a professional network? Are they already doing things like webinars and newsletter? Because many founders already have something in place that we can really piggyback on and amplify by putting some focus there. The other thing that we like to do is, especially on the B2B side, when you're looking at professional services organizations, mm-hmm. We really like to help them niche down. So what we'll do is we'll do a customer analysis. We'll look at all their clients that they've had over like the past 3 to 5 years. And what we do is we help them niche down and say, okay, what if we just focused in this area? And there's lots of benefits to niching down and focusing when you're spending marketing dollars. So we may look at that and they have a couple different segments of companies that they've worked with in certain industries, and then it gets very scattered from there. So we'll say, well, let's go down into this industry. Let's see how we can make everything that you've been doing combine into one cohesive plan and really amplify the number of relationships. So yeah, we're doing an index of what they're doing and doing some customer analysis and guiding them on how to niche down based on the budget.
I like that too, because what I'm hearing here is that it's not cookie cutter. You're looking at everybody and every company as an individual here, and you're like, okay, Alex does a podcast, does okay. He's been a big blogger for years. Okay, he's not been really working the speaker circuit much. That probably not an area we need to worry about. I like how you're going to find the assets that are working. Do you have to have tough conversations though with some of your clients when they do that initial look-see? Do you have to kind of give them the news where they're like really crushed that maybe their weekly mimeograph newspaper is just really not hitting?
Yeah, a lot of the conversations, especially on the professional services side, that get tough are helping them realize and understand, what you have to do from a marketing perspective to niche down. So our concept of this is, hey, if it's an inbound lead, you take it, right? Don't worry about what industry they're in. If you're used to doing that and you're horizontal, take that lead. But when it comes to spending marketing dollars, we really want to pick an area that you've had a lot of success in because we can really build momentum. And so sometimes it can be really hard to work with a founder and talk them into that. And it varies based on the founder and kind of how they want to focus, because a lot of times, just like me and maybe you, we built the company on what I would consider in the early days opportunistic sales, right? We got out and we networked and we talked to a lot of people, and they were coming in from different industries. And all of a sudden, we have to have this conversation around, okay, let's focus a little bit more because you don't have the budget of, Deloitte or a big services firm, right? You only have this much budget. Let's go focus that money down. And that's a tough conversation.
It is a tough, and Josh, honestly, I had to have that conversation. I'm not working with a lead generation company, but I have outsourced a lot of my marketing recently, and we're just kind of getting off the ground right now. And one of the conversations was, you'll be gratified to hear there's people out there who practice just in a similar way to you do, is they didn't say niche down, but they really said, man, Alex, you're covering the waterfront here, buddy. You don't have the money to like say I can do 15 things. You need to pick the three things you do best and that you want to do and that are profitable, and let's go after that. Let's go after the market for those things, and we'll see how it goes. But I can't fault the logic for that at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of benefits, and I wish I could list them all, but I probably don't have time. But I mean, the some of the top ones are, when somebody goes to your website and you have an industry vertical page, right? You don't have to change your whole website, but if you have at least one industry vertical and you're showing that you've worked with five different clients in that industry and they've all given you a review, well, when the sixth one comes in, you just point them at that, right? Here's my success in that industry. That just compounds and makes it easier to close deals. It also makes it easier to go get in front of your target audience. So, say for example, for us, it would be hard as the founder. I can go find other organizations with just founders and business owners. Well, I can get in because I'm the CEO, but my salesperson can't get in because they're a salesperson. The inverse is that they can easily get in an industry association, though, right? We can pay to focus on an industry. So, as you're scaling the business, that's the hard part for a lot of founders, is the dynamics change, how we built the company and drove the revenue as founders. The switch to scalable revenue, needs different solutions. And so we really enjoy kind of helping make that transition and narrowing it down and walking them through the benefit of that.
How did this, if we could step back for a minute from what you do, but kind of the why you do? I know you're a very avid supporter of Boy Scouts of America. You really take the time, and you have the freedom now to coach youth and show up for your kids' events. And has that always been something since you launched your career, and particularly your career as a founder and running your own shop? Has it always been, I'm gonna do my best to not be on the hamster wheel, all day, because I got kids, or I want kids, or do you mind if we don't, if that's not too personal? Tell us how you
Yeah,
feel.
sure. I mean, I think it's gotten better and better over the years. I mean, I think that's a big reason why I'm so passionate about helping founders, is it's kind of twofold. One, I spent over $300,000 growing my first multi-million-dollar business and blowing it on lead gen services and going, okay, why isn't this working? What is different between what I'm being told out in the market from other larger companies and what works for a small B2B firm? And I think those things are fundamentally different, and most of what we're told doesn't actually translate down very well. That was near and dear to my heart on like helping other founders. And then, to further answer your question, You know, entrepreneurship has just given me so much. You know, I didn't start off with all of those things and opportunities. I had a certain set. And by growing my business, you know, we were able to provide, you know, new opportunities for people in the course of careers. I was able to grow and then, you know, have more time available to give back, you know, and go coach kids and be a donor and things like that, which I don't remember my parents really having the time or ability to do. So I guess in some ways it's a up, you know, scaling up generationally. But yeah, entrepreneurship's given me a lot of different opportunities, and I really want to see other entrepreneurs not be tied to their desk struggling to drive all the revenue for themselves, right? Creating those other opportunities out there in the community.
Yeah, Josh, I'm with you there. One reason I walked away from a very good career, I started my own business right around the time my daughter was born 13 years ago or 14 years ago. And everybody's like, are you nuts? But I was just like, this is the only kid I'm probably, I had a kid later in life. And I'm like, this is probably the only kid I'm going to have. And she was perfect. So that's it. Why try to, you know, get another perfect one? But it's funny because I worked hard and so many hours, yet I love the ability to balance it on like, okay, this is when the kid is awake, or this is when I got a older, take her to preschool. You know, that there's that stuff you just don't get back, you know? So I love that about it. But here, now that she's 14 and forget I exist, except when she needs a ride, I'm like, you know, now I got to make money, make sure I can pay for her college. And, you know, it's, right. It's a different, right? It's how things go. Yeah. So I just say that just to say I appreciate hearing that from you, that you really do get that as you're one of us, although you're much more successful and bigger than I am. But it's the same. It's that same mentality, though. And I think a lot of our listeners feel the same way. It's like, you know, I don't care to be wealthy. OK, I want to be comfortable. But, you know, you can't take those treasures with you. The treasures I have here in life are being spending time with my family and doing the things I want to do, and probably freedom from having a 9-to-5 is right. Great for me. So I wanted to ask you that, but you said something that it got me. It's like you said you blew $300,000 on lead gen. Well, here, I only blew, well, I wasn't three, let's just say this, it wasn't six figures, but I blew a lot about 5-6 years ago on a inbound marketing firm you may have heard of, that I just wanted to use their service, but they talked me into being an agency, and let's just say, disaster. So it took me a little while to get that paid off, but yeah. It was a very painful but important lesson every month when I was writing a check to pay off that debt. So I think what I want to say about that is a long way of saying, Josh, is that people, particularly small business people like myself, boutique small businesses, we have to be so circumspect about every potential that comes down the road. And I'm just wondering, what are the main objections you get when you find somebody who fits? They heard you on a podcast and they're interested. What are the main objections that you have to knock down for them? Because a guy like me, I'd be like, you know, I got bent over before, sorry, but that's right. Not right. Tell me what you guys are not going to do.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the big challenges, right? Is a dollar to a founder or small business owner does not, you know, equal the same amount, you know, or feel like it's the same amount as to a large company, yeah. Right? It's very near and dear. And so I think there's a couple different challenges we get, right? Is somebody says, "Hey, I've tried this multiple times, you know, how is this different?" And that's where we have to come in and say, "Look, we're working on demand generation, not lead generation, right? These are the results. These are the real timelines," and really being candid about the lessons. So I think there's a lot of just misconceptions out there where somebody says, "Look, you know, yeah, I'll sign your year agreement, but," and not with us, but, you know, I've done it with a lead gen firm or, you know, PPC, whatever. And it's like, okay, when I get my return, I'll up the amount, right? So there's different ways that people think about it. And so overcoming that and saying, listen, you have no marketing budget or very little, this is what foundation looks like. This is what a real timeline looks like. It's not easy button, you're going to pay and in 30 days, you're going to have all the leads and your business is just going to scale up. If that was the case, then many more businesses would be, you know, a lot larger than they are now. So, you know, the big objection is, yeah, I've tried something else in the past. How are you different? And that's where we really come in and say, you know, here's the different timelines. Here's what this really looks like. And here's what we're trying to do from a goal perspective, because the goal for demand gen is different from lead generation.
And I see you have several packages, the things you offer, but tell us, if you don't mind, real quick in the time we have left, well, tell us a little bit about Revenue SEO.
Yeah. So Revenue SEO is a project where we came up and we said, we were kind of dealing with similar pushback, right? We had worked with clients that had done SEO in the past, and they said, listen, I paid some SEO person. We weren't getting any revenue. You know, we paid for this and we did this for 6 months and we didn't get any leads. So Revenue SEO is a different spin on that, again, with the niche down focus and saying, okay, it's a content strategy. And here's exactly what our goal is. So instead of focusing on this broad base of SEO and all the different things you do, what we do is we go pick one niche and we focus on driving engagement through that niche. So let's say, for example, you specialize in working with financial services companies, or maybe you work with a lot of different companies, and we do our analysis and say, okay, financial services seems to be a common area you work in.
Right.
We only go do SEO to drive people in that industry or on a key service or a key phrase. Ooh. So again, it's a niching down again on the focus, because the budgets are smaller in smaller businesses, to drive results through that focus. So that's Revenue SEO. We're like, how can we tie it as close to revenue as possible?
Okay. So yeah. So you work on your sales amplification and engagement. You have your content driven SEO, and that's among your packages and your services. You've got HubSpot services. You've got consulting services. Where were you when I was really up to my hips with those folks? But that was more my fault than theirs. But anyway, you live and you learn, right? Tell us, where can we find more about you? People are probably going to want to talk to you, because frankly, I wish I had met people like you, you know, in years past, you know, and just tell us a little bit where we can find you and what people should do.
Sure. So you can go to founderscale.com and click our contact form and just ask for Josh. That's an easy way. LinkedIn, Josh Sweeney, you can find me there. And then we're always doing training sessions on this. So we enjoy, you know, all of our webinars and demand generation, you know, campaigns on our own are very educational, because we're just looking to help as much as possible.
Right.
So if you find any of those on our website, you know, feel free to join.
If you do talk to Josh, please tell him you heard him here on PR After Hours. Josh Sweeney is a seasoned entrepreneur whose relentless drive has given him the platform to build big ideas and even bigger companies. I'll tell you what, he is the founder of FounderScale. And again, as he said, you can find them on the web at founderscale.com. But fear not, if you are driving or on the treadmill or the elliptical, don't panic. Don't stop what you're doing. Just go to prafterhours.com or look in the show notes wherever you get your podcast. Josh, I've learned a lot, and you've reinforced some things, and you've given me hope that lead gen actually can work with the right people at the helm. And obviously, FounderScale are those right people. Thanks again for joining us here in the virtual lounge.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, she's Chica.
And he's the man.
And we are a monthly podcast featuring two friends who've never met in person, but we have a great time. She's an actress, a poet, and a screenwriter. I'm allegedly a writer, but I don't sell anything. And every month we get together and just talk about our lives, the difference between living in LA and Kansas City, I don't know, different foods we like, our genealogy, things that irritate us, all that stuff. And we're also people who can answer your questions about your own life. So tune in every month to Chica
and the Man.
And where can you find us, Chica?
ChicaandMan.com. When you go there, you could go to our Facebook page and our Instagram. All the links are there.
You've been invited to a good time. It is your decision whether or not to accept with Chica
and the Man.
You know what that means. It's last call here at the Virtual Lounge. Be sure to visit prafterhours.com for links to what we discussed in this episode and more. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time for another round at PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.